Hey everyone, and welcome to the 110th episode of Tino. There is no off season. This episode of the show is brought to you by Fielder's Choice Goods, featuring beautiful hand-cut wallets made from vintage game-worn baseball gloves. You can get an exclusive offer of 10% off their Classics line just in time for Father's Day when you go to fcgoods.com/Tino. That's fcgoods.com/Tino. Brett, I'm pumped. We have a sponsor, and B, they knew who to go to. I'm the wallet guy. Every wallet is designed for coins if you put a coin in the wallet. That's all I'm saying. And first of all, they're made from baseball gloves, gloves that hold things. It's perfect. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean they really did. They picked their pre-roll reader well.
To the 110th episode of Tino. As I said, it is Baseball Prospectus's daily podcast focusing solely on fantasy and dynasty league formats. I am your host, Craig Goldstein. I am the minor league editor at Baseball Prospectus. Joining me today is Brett Sayre, BP's managing editor, and we've got George behind the glass, who will likely chime in Ben's absence. Ben is, he saw a leafy green on the street, and he's been in his house the rest of the time. He can't join us. It's sad and disappointing.
Yeah, he's gonna have a problem if he doesn't get over this fear of lettuce.
I know. I mean, a part of me doesn't blame him, but a lot of me finds it funny. Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna get into a few things today. We have a awesome article by Zach Kreiser on the expansion. Golden Knights in Las Vegas and what that would look like if applied to baseball. Obviously, if people don't know, the Golden Knights are in the Stanley Cup in their first year in existence. It's a remarkable story, so we're going to get into that. We're going to go through an article from Jeff Paternostro on kind of updating the top 101 and is it worth doing this early in the season. And then despite what we might talk about there, we're going to go into some guys who we would move up or down based on early season performance and reports.
So as Craig alluded to, Zach Kreiser wrote a really fun article about what an expansion draft in baseball might look like these days. And it's been 21 years since we had one. It was 1997 when the Diamondbacks and the Devil Rays had their expansion draft. And he kind of walks through what some people's strategies might be, some of the difficulties teams would have with it, and in sort of the corollary of what the Golden Knights are doing, we thought it would be a lot of fun to pick a couple of particularly deep rosters and talk about who we would leave exposed to an expansion draft if we were forced to. So I think what we should probably do first is go over the rules. So, basically each team gets to block 15 players from being taken. They have to protect, right, Craig?
Yes, they're going to have. They are required to protect players with no trade clauses. That's one of the big ones.
Yep.
And as well as guys who are free agents within the next year, is that correct?
Yes.
Right. So,
players who are in the final year of their contracts are exempt from the process, so they do not have to be protected.
Okay, so there you go. And then it's also worth noting that players who have not appeared in the majors and have only appeared in the minors are not needed to be protected unless, depending on what age they signed, they have been in the system for 3 or 4 years. Is that correct?
Yeah. So if they signed before they were 19, they have 4 years. If they were signed after, then it's 3 years. So basically anyone who was drafted out of high school or in J2 gets 4 years. Anyone else gets 3 years.
Right. So that's kind of the parameters that were set around the 1997 model. And that's what Zach used in his article. He looked at the Yankees, who are obviously a very deep team. He went through and kind of highlighted who would be protected, who is ineligible, and then highlighted kind of options that worked out that were borderline. And on the borderline option for the Yankees, you have Sonny Gray, Jordan Montgomery, Dellin Betances, Greg Bird, Chad Green, and Clint Frazier. And it's worth pointing out that in this situation, the Yankees would have to protect someone like Jacoby Ellsbury because he has no trade. So that kind of squeezes the number of players they can keep. So it forces teams into an interesting conundrum.
It definitely does. So we're gonna walk through three teams that we think are fun to discuss here. We're gonna start with the Houston Astros. Then we're going to move over to the Dodgers, and then we're going to do the Cardinals at the end. So a nice mix of teams with relatively deep 40-man rosters and potentially different challenges in terms of protecting their players.
Yeah, I just want to throw out, like, you should read Zach's article first and foremost. It's really fun, and it's he goes through the different ways in which teams could go about this process. And then to the people who suggested that we should do a mock draft like this in the off season, you have Brett's attention. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. Yes, you do.
All right. So why don't you kick it off?
Okay. So for the Astros, the easiest place to start are the players that have to be protected. There really shouldn't be. Now, actually, I have a rules question here.
Yeah.
So Justin Verlander and Jose Altuve both have no trade clauses, and those are relatively obvious names anyway. But Brian McCann also has a no trade clause, but he is also in the final year of his contract.
Yeah,
does that mean he is excluded?
It's a good question.
There's a club option.
Yeah, I think he would be required to be protected. Or I guess either way, the other team can't get him. Then yeah, I think ineligible.
Yeah, I think he would be ineligible.
Okay, so for that, we're starting off with Verlander and Altuve, who they'd protect anyway. So they're in good shape there.
Yep, and then we can throw out some of the names of players who are going to be free, and we're assuming free agents after the 2018 season. So we're assuming this happened basically on opening day this year.
Yeah.
So the people who are free agents after 2018 for the Astros are Charlie Morton, Tony Sipp, Marwin Gonzalez, Dallas Keuchel, and Evan Gattis. So that's there are some good holds there without having to use one of the 15.
Right. Yeah. They're in strong shape, but they do have they only have. Yeah. Right. Okay. That's they're in good shape.
They are. So Craig is tracking this as we go along. So should we just kind of alternate guys that we would throwing out guys that we would keep and then we'll confirm them and move on?
Well, let's just pick out the obvious ones. And then we'll go from there.
All right. So the very obvious ones here. You've got Carlos Correa, you've got George Springer, you've got Garrett Cole, and you've got Lance McCullers and Alex Bregman. All right, so those five, I don't think there's even any discussion about, right?
Right. And so, Brett, just for people, so there are multiple rounds of how this worked in the article and in the actual thing. Like, you would protect 15 guys and then have to protect, you know, then they would get to pick the two teams got to pick, and then they had to protect more. In our situation, we're just going through the first 15. Is that right?
Correct. We're trying to figure out who the best player is that the Astros would not be able to protect, basically.
Right. Okay. That's right. So, and I'm just trying to make sure I have this right in what we're tracking. Based on the way Zach did this, the guys like, so Verlander and Altuve count against the 13 slots, the 15 slots. Is that correct?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I have that right. So we're already up to 7 people based on who we've named.
Mm-hmm.
Verlander, Altuve, Correa, Springer, Bregman, McCullers, and Cole. I think Charlie Morton's an easy one at this point, to be honest.
Well, Morton is ineligible.
You did. I'm good at this. I'm keeping track and losing track at the same time.
It's a talent, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, we threw his name out there. Well, they're going to keep Josh Reddick, right?
I think Josh Reddick is like just a tier below obvious.
Yeah. I think it's likely they'd protect Derek Fisher.
I don't know. I think we hold off on Fisher.
Okay, let's hold off on him. Who's your next guy?
I think that a couple of guys who I think they're pretty likely to protect would be Ken Giles and Brad Peacock.
Yeah, I think that's true. I agree. And I think relievers are going to be an interesting thing. Like, if you go through other teams, I think there are going to be some relievers that are left open, but I think this organization obviously understands the value there. I think Ulieski Gurriel is a pretty easy
team. I wonder whether they would leave him exposed just trying to see if someone would take the contract.
How bad is the contract?
It's not that it's that bad. The contract is it's a 5-year $47 million
contract. No, they're not. He's worth that. He's so worth that, even if he's not.
He is, but I mean, there are some other names on here that are pretty good.
All right,
good.
Well, so if you want to hold off on Gurriel, who are your other names?
We'll hold off on Gurriel for now.
I assume you're going to go to Devenski?
Would you put Chris Devenski in there?
I'd take Gurriel over Devenski. And it's just bat over arm. It's more of a short thing. I'm not trying to knock Devenski's.
Let's put both of them in there as 11 and 12 for now.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they both like, make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So circling back, I don't think there's any other bullpen arms that they would necessarily protect.
I think that's why I think Fisher probably makes it.
Maybe. What about Francis Martes?
Yeah, I mean he's an interesting name. If I'm them, I keep him. I make an effort to keep him.
Yeah.
Are you in
agreement? No, I think I agree with you on that one.
Okay, so Martes is 13, so we got 2 more slots. Some of the names that we haven't touched are Tony Kemp, JD Davis, who's been up and down a bunch for them, Jake Marisnyk. We got their whole rotation, right? Max Stassi, David Paulino.
I wouldn't put Paulino on there. Yeah. Now, the question is: Are there prospects that is Kyle Tucker eligible?
He's not on the 40 man and hasn't played in the majors, so I don't believe he is.
But if he's 4 years from being drafted, then he would be eligible.
Well, that's easy enough to check. That's easy enough to check. He was drafted in 2015, and if this was happening prior to 2018, then no, he's not.
Yes, so he is not eligible.
Right. I mean, that would have been an easy yes. I mean, AJ Reed, Tyler White are on the 40-man. I don't think either of those guys are getting protected.
No, I don't think so either. I'm now going back to their off-season top prospect list. Now, Forrest Whitley wouldn't need to be protected.
Right.
Bukauskas and Alvarez wouldn't need to be protected. There's really there's really nothing on the no one on the prospect side that would need to be protected.
Rogelio Armenteros could be interesting. Signed at 21. This is 2018 is his fourth year, so he would have had 3 years in.
True.
I don't think they protect him, but I think he's probably the top available prospect.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, he probably is the top available prospect.
Okay, so we have two more slots. I think Fisher, based on the names we're talking about.
Yeah, I think I can get behind Fisher now. I wonder if, I mean, Hector Rondon has been pretty good for them.
Yeah, but I don't. Isn't he a free agent after this year? Did they sign him?
No,
to a
he's got a
deal?
He's got a second year. He signed a 2 year deal this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think. You think they protect it? I don't think anyone's going that hard after Hector Rondon.
Probably not. But would you keep Marisnik over him? We still have one more spot left, right?
I'd keep either Paulino or Marisnik, probably. Yeah.
So or
is it? I mean, is has or no? I'm not keeping Stassi.
Can I jump in here for 1 second to just throw out an idea? Okay, yeah. So part of the appeal of having the blank slate as this expansion franchise, wouldn't that be to experiment a little bit? So that is the reason I think someone like J.D. Davis is intriguing to me, because you just have
we're saying who the Astros would protect before you can even get to who the team would pick.
Yeah. Well, I think you know Davis would be available, so...
I don't think Davis is the 15th spot here. Do you regret?
No, and I do agree with George. I do think he would be interesting.
Davis, yeah, I mean, I think AJ Reed falls into that category.
Yeah.
You know, he's bad, but, you know, it's kind of you run guys out. I think maybe Paulino gets my 15th spot. Brett, I don't know if you go...
I think I'd give... Else. I'm gonna be a homer here. I think I'd give the 15th spot to Jake Mareznick.
Okay, I don't think, you know, I don't object to that. So let's.
I think there's enough value there, especially on a contending team. He's just a quality extra outfielder.
Right. So if you want to just run through the names that are available after that, you're talking about Tony Kemp, Stassi, J.D. Davis, Will Harris in relief, Hector Rondon, yep. Joe Smith, Colin McHugh, and some guys like John Del Gustave. I don't think he's really in contention. We mentioned A.J. Reed. David Paulino would be available in this situation. I think Rogelio Armenteros might be someone a team would pick in this situation.
Possibly, yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. This, you know, kind of fizzles out.
What really works to the Astros' advantage is the number of guys that are a year away from free agency in this model, because McCann, Morton, Keuchel, Gattis, and Marwin Gonzalez are a huge portion of their roster.
They are.
Okay. Do you want to move on to LA?
Yeah, let's move on to the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a different problem than
they don't have any no trades.
Yes.
So do you have who is a year away from, or who's a free agent at year's end and thus not eligible, Brett?
I do not. I had the Astros one up in front of me. But I am pulling up the Dodgers one now. For the Los Angeles Dodgers, you have Logan Forsyth, Hyunjin Ryu, Yasmani Grandal. Those are the three that are in their last year of the deal.
Fantastic.
Now, you don't get to count Kershaw, even though he has the opt-out. He's probably going to use it.
Yeah. Okay, so... Kershaw's a keeper. That's number one. That's an obvious one. Turner, obvious. Seager, obvious. Bellinger, obvious.
Yep. I'd say Chris Taylor at this point is obvious, too.
Taylor, Buehler, both obvious. Jansen. So we're up to six. What's that?
Jansen.
Jansen, obvious. Jansen,
Alex Wood, Kenta Maeda.
Maeda, Puig.
Puig.
That's 10. Yeah,
this fills up fast.
This fills up fast, and this is where it gets dicey.
Verdugo, yeah. Do you have to protect him? I can't.
You do on the have 40? To protect him.
He
disappeared in the majors. So I think Verdugo's prospect. I think you have to have really to protect
in handy.
Yeah, you got
to. You have to protect Verdugo. So he's on my list. We're up to 11.
Yeah.
Do you have a next one? This is where it starts. I mean, I don't think they protect Rich Hill.
I don't think they would at this point. I think Barnes probably gets... You could make the argument for Barnes. I think it's probably a pretty good argument, even though I'm still not the world's biggest Austin Barnes.
Me either. I'll add him. I'm not super into it, but fine.
What about Julio Urias?
See, that's where I think it gets interesting. I think you got to. I don't think that's even a question, frankly.
Yeah.
George, are you there or no?
Yeah, I think you have to because he's probably the first pick if you don't.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If I were an expansion team, I would absolutely take Julio Urias.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we're up to 13. Peterson?
Jock Peterson is right there. We haven't had any relievers besides
well, they don't really have. I don't think you need to.
Josh Fields is their second best reliever, right? Or him or Cingrani?
It's him or Cingrani. I don't think. I mean, Fields is 33, and I think he's good. I like him, but I don't think you. I don't think that's necessary.
I think the value of starting pitchers, you got to look at like a Ross Stripling as a guy.
Yeah, I mean Stripling or yeah. I mean, I guess Brock Stewart's hurt, but yeah. I mean.
Because he could start for an expansion team and probably be.
If I'm an expansion team, I'm definitely willing to pick Ross Stripling.
Yeah. Yep.
Brett, is Stripling your 15th or?
Yeah, probably. I think Peterson and Stripling are probably the last
prospect
two.
Wise, Dennis Santana, who's now at AAA and has been very good as a pitcher, drafted at 18, but this is 2018. So I guess he had four years in. Does that mean he's protected?
If he had 4 years, I believe that means he's available.
Okay. So he would be available. I think you probably keep Stripling over Santana. Just because he's done it at the major league level.
You don't have to protect DJ Peters, right?
DJ Peters drafted in 16.
So definitely not then. Yusniel Diaz, you don't have to protect.
Peters was drafted at 20, but he's only been in the org for 2 years, yeah.
Yeah. Yadier Alvarez, you don't need to protect.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much all these other guys you don't need to protect.
Yeah.
Kybert.
No. Yeah. Wigwam. No, he was signed in...
14.
Yeah, he was signed in 2014. So let's count him up here.
He's the only other guy.
Oh, so he's available. No,
this would be his fourth year. So he's fine.
Okay.
This is
okay.
His fourth year.
Just check.
2018 is his fourth year, so entering the year, he was only there for three. Yeah, no, it's a good one. So I think the answer is probably Stripling.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it is.
Okay, so that gets us to 15, which means, you're picking from Enrique Hernandez. I mean, we didn't talk about him. I think they probably keep Stripling over him.
I agree. I would, and I think they would.
I mean, he's definitely useful, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But it's a limited sort of profile. Like, there's not a lot of upside if you're an expansion team. You're not going to take
him. Yeah. Well, he's a lefty masher who plays everywhere, which is not useful.
It's valuable, but not like cornerstone franchise building viable stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk yourself into taking Andrew Tolles.
Right. I mean, that was kind of the other big name, I think. I think you also have to consider Pedro Baez.
Yeah, but then if you took him, then the draft would take like 8 hours.
Right, yeah.
He's still making his way to the podium, folks. He'll be here any minute.
Matt so, Kemp?
Yeah, Kemp. I mean, we can joke, but still hits.
Yeah.
So you got, if you're trying to compete in year one, I think you could do worse. I mean, Rich Hill, you know, I don't know. You worry about the injuries. Kyle Farmer is catcher and third base. That's pretty useful. He's already 28, though, which is
less useful.
Yeah. Kind of disturbing, if you think about it.
It's true. I mean, between Tolles and Hernandez and even like Stewart, or there's some,
yeah, Brock Stewart, right, exactly.
You definitely can get some interesting names that are available here.
Brock Stewart's only 26. You could use him as a starter. He's a back end starter, but like that's still useful. I mean, between Kemp, Hernandez, Stewart, I think it gets interesting.
Yeah.
And they could definitely, you know, potentially protect someone else and leave a guy like Barnes or something like that if you're already keeping, or if you're able to retain Grandal as it is. So, I don't know, some interesting names. And you want to go through the Cardinals now?
Yeah. So the Cardinals, you know, we talk about each of these teams having different challenges in this scenario. The Cardinals have three players who might not be on their 15 that have no trade clauses. Right. And those are Dexter Fowler, Brett Cecil, and Adam Wainwright. Though Adam Wainwright is in the last year of his deal. So
So under the McCann corollary, we're not counting him.
Yes, he does not need to be counted.
Can we take a moment to talk about how in the hell Brett Cecil has a no trade clause?
Sure.
Hell does Brett Cecil have a no trade clause?
I don't know.
That's, you know, bad.
It is bananas. It's bananas enough that I'm actually going to go in while we're starting this and check this again because I have to pay.
That doesn't seem right. All right, I'll throw it out.
It is 4 years, $30.5 million, signed 2017, $1 million signing bonus, full no trade protection.
Full no trade. Are you kidding?
Full no trade protection.
I'd like to shake that agent's hand.
Yeah.
What the hell? Did
it say who his agent is? Aces. Yeah.
Aces. God damn. All right. Yeah. All right. Let's go through. There's some easy automatic ones. I think Tommy Pham.
Well, let's go. Should we go through the? Should we go through the 1 year guys?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sorry.
So Greg Holland. Right. Oh.
Well.
Not eligible.
Yeah.
Bud Norris.
Well, honestly, if we're doing this day one of the opening season, Holland was a free agent. So
that's true. Not that it matters for this purpose.
No, it sure doesn't.
And Bud Norris. That's it.
Okay, that's it.
So there's going to be a lot of decisions to make here.
Yeah. So you got. I started with Tommy Pham, Marcelo Zuna, automatic.
Yep. Carlos Martinez, automatic. I would say Paul DeJong at this point is automatic.
Yep, I think it has to be.
Yeah. Michael Wacha probably still needs to be kept.
I think so. I mean, Alex, you're going to keep... I was going to say Alex Reyes, yeah. That was my...
No question. And that gets us to, what, 8?
Yeah, we're at 8 on that.
Flaherty?
Jack Flaherty.
Jack Flaherty, yeah.
Definitely. I think, look, I mean, I don't know about the strikeout rate, but I think at this point you're keeping Jordan Hicks, right? Or I guess he probably wouldn't need to be protected.
Jordan Hicks wouldn't. I don't think
he'd because need to he be protected. Wasn't up. He hadn't debuted yet.
Well, he would. It depends on when he was drafted. No, he was drafted in 2015, so he does not need to be protected.
Yeah, so we're not counting him for these purposes. Carson Kelly and Yadier Molina both would need to be.
Yeah.
See, I think Molina's interesting. Like, how much longer are you expecting him to play?
Yeah, but if they're the Cardinals.
I know, but George. Sentimentality is you're right, but that's a tough one to.
I mean, and to George's point, the contract is bad.
Yeah,
It's really bad. Actually, you know what? Let's put him to the side. That's a weird one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a weird one. We'll put that to the side.
All right. How about Tyler O'Neill?
I think you got to.
I kind of think you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to keep him.
We're at 10 right now.
Let me throw this out at both of you guys. Are they keeping any of the, like, Dominic Leone? Is he worth protecting?
Honestly, if we were really doing this in the off season, he probably does make the list, but he's hurt with an injury that sounds not great.
Yeah.
So we have the benefit of hindsight now. Miles Mikolas?
Yeah, I mean, they signed him in the offseason, right? They're gonna protect him at that point. I mean, he's a rotation piece at the very worst.
Right, like starting pitching is probably the most valuable commodity you have to protect in this type of a draft.
Yeah, so without Molina, we're now at 12, and with Mikolas, we're now at 12. We got three more.
Weaver.
Yeah, I think Weaver's got to make it at this point. I'm not into him, but again, the value of pitching, I don't think that's a question.
Yep.
I mean, Matt Carpenter is not on the list. Jed Jerko is not on the list. Colton Wong is not on the list.
Where is Carpenter? Why am I missing? Oh, there. Yeah. Oh, Jose Martinez?
Jose Martinez is not on the list.
Okay, so I think...
There's a lot Carpenter's going on here.
What was Carpenter's situation heading into the season? I mean, he wasn't bad last year.
He said he changed his swing and it didn't work for him, and then he was changing his swing back. Or that's how he phrased it.
But he did have a 120 OPS plus.
Yeah, he just wasn't hitting for average at all.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. They're keeping him. They're keeping Carpenter.
I would have to think so.
They're keeping Carpenter. So that's 14. I mean, Jose Martinez, potential breakout. He had an incredible half season, right?
I mean, that is a guy who has top expansion draft pick written all over him.
I agree. We also...
Harrison Bader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they keep him. I don't think you protect him. I don't think you can.
So we're down to the last spot. We've included Weaver and Carpenter. Now we're talking Martinez, Molina. I think Jerko probably in the mix.
I mean, he has to be. Jerko has been a well above average hitter the last 2 years.
That's upsetting to me. I'm not prepared to acknowledge that.
Acknowledge it as little as you want, but it is true. Yeah.
So it is true.
I guess if you're St. Louis, this comes down to how much you value sentimentality and trying to not upset your fans when this list comes out, right?
Yeah.
Versus keeping the optimal collection of players.
I really don't think there's any way the Cardinals would not protect Molina.
So, but this is a little bit of a weird thing where it's like, are we saying what we would do or what they would do?
Both.
Uh-huh.
Part of this equation, right, in both of these scenarios, like you laid out, Craig, is if you don't protect Molina and then he doesn't get picked and then he has to come back, isn't he pissed off
at
you?
That's weird.
Yeah, that's
weird. It gets really weird.
Yeah. But that squeezes out guys like Weaver and maybe Martinez. Like, that's...
Jose Martinez.
Yeah.
Carlos.
Right, right.
I think I would protect Molina before I protected Matt Carpenter.
Really?
I do. I think so.
Man.
So
it's a tough call.
I think there's a lot going on here.
On a pure roster building standpoint, if I already have a Carson Kelly and Molina's contract.
Molina's contract with Carson Kelly.
I'm aware of that, but I'm not trying to predict what they're going to do. I'm going to make the case that keeping Yadier Molina and his contract is a bad move in this situation.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting, what, $20 million a year? Was that what it was? Was it 4 for $60 or 3 for $60?
Molina is $3 for $60.
That's $20 million freed up if someone takes him.
Yeah, it is. You got to be pretty confident someone's taking him, though.
No, I mean, I don't know. I think I could.
You know
deal
what I mean?
With
like, you got to hope that he gets picked, because otherwise, it's like not great.
I wonder whether that's a little overblown.
All right, I think for the 15 spot, I'm taking Jose Martinez. Although coming in off last year, I'm not sure I believed in him. I don't know if I could make that. I'm like dealing I'm acting with hindsight here.
I think if push comes to shove and the Cardinals want to be a little bit sentimental about their
picks. Well, we're allowed
picks,
to act with hindsight. Like, I mean, you would be much less vociferous about keeping Jack Flaherty at this point in the offseason, right?
That's probably true. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
And Mikolas, probably.
Yeah. Right, probably one of the pitchers gets pushed off, but like.
Well, and here's one of the things at this point in the off season. Colton Wong had a not horrible year last year.
Yeah,
he's been terrible this year.
And we haven't even talked about him yet, so that's not great. He's probably available.
You know what? Okay, so I'm putting Jerko in for the 15th. I'm leaving Molina exposed.
You're leaving Molina and Jose Martinez exposed.
Yeah, I'm not, because if I'm in day one of this season, or like the day before the first game of this season, I'm not sure I'm buying on Jose Martinez on the 29-year-old breakout. I'm willing to admit that I was not there.
How much are you buying him now?
I don't know, more than before? Enough that I
28% more.
Yeah, I mean, he's been basically as good again. So far,
mm-hmm.
You're adding another 200 plate appearances to his stat line. I mean, I think that's reasonable to combined with last year to buy in. But last year I was skeptical.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving. So that means the expansion team for me, it has a chance to choose from Jose Martinez, Yadier Molina, Colton Wong. You know, they traded for Connor Green last year, and he's prospect eligible, so he's on that list.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have anyone else. I mean, again, we talked about the relievers. Dominic Leon would be probably attractive before this terrible start to the season. Is there anyone else? I mean, John Gant, probably not getting picked.
Nah, probably not getting picked.
Oscar Mercado having a good year this year, but was kind of getting better last year. Would have been available as a prospect.
Harrison Bader, like we talked about
before. Oh, Harrison Bader, right? Yeah. I mean, there are some interesting prospects further down. I think some of these guys get protected, you know, in the second go around. So the Cardinals might not get rated exactly, but probably the best options of the three teams we talked about are from the Cardinals. Yeah. If your expansion
actually, Bader doesn't need to be protected. Bader was a college pick in 2015. He just
but he's appeared
it.
In the majors.
He's appeared that in the majors.
Oh, that precludes you from the
correct. That's why. Yeah, I mean that's why.
Gotcha. That's why. Okay. My bad.
Max Schrock. I love this step chart.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, all right. So, do you think if you're the expansion team, Brett, that you're taking Enya?
This episode of There Is No Off Season is brought to you by Fielder's Choice Goods, wallets, card cases, and money clips made from repurposed vintage baseball gloves. Each product is a one of a kind, bearing the marks of the piece of baseball history from which it's made. For a limited time, get an exclusive Father's Day offer of 10% off the entire Fielder's Choice Classics line when you go to fcgoods.com/Tino. That's fcgoods.com/Tino. Fielder's Choice Goods. The legacy is in the leather. So we still have a sponsor. They haven't fired us since the first time that we did the read. So that's good.
And they're not going to fire us, presumably because Brett did not let me read the tagline.
Presumably, yes. And we're trying to keep... You don't want to hear Craig say the word leather.
No. No, it's disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
So whose glove would you like to have a wallet made from? If you could pick one player.
Oh.
Jeff Kepinger.
Oh, Brett. That's like an extremely Jersey pick, I feel like. I mean, how do you not say, like, Ozzie Smith?
I mean, sure.
Francisco Lindor. That's
yeah. I like Lindor. Yeah. I mean, Andrelton Simmons, I think.
Yep. Yeah. There we go.
Big glove.
It's the magnum of gloves. I don't know. George, who do you have? Who would you like?
Oh, it's definitely Bartolo Colon. It's got to be. I mean,
the big sexy glove.
Yeah, big sexy was using this glove, and now it's in my back pocket. It's fantastic.
That's where I want big sexy's hand. In my back pocket.
Fielder's Choice, hook me up. If you're doing a custom glove, I want it from Bartolo Colon. That would be my dream come true. Yeah.
There is no way that Bartolo Colon doesn't use a softball glove.
Also, he's built up a collection over the last 20 years. Like, he must have like 100 gloves, like, just laying around somewhere.
Yeah,
he's got it.
Yeah,
yeah. All right, so
just for the second portion of the show here, I think we wanted to highlight Jeff Paternoster's article from May 18th. We would have talked about it last week if we were able to record. We were not, so I wanted to bring it up this week. It kind of speaks to. Listen, we know other outlets were aware that they're doing kind of May top 100 updates or have talked about doing them either May or June, something like that. We do not update our top 100 list until we do a top 50 at mid-season. And Jeff kind of talks about the reasoning for that when you get into kind of how the evaluation process works, how scouts for teams generally sit on an entire series, which is either five or six games. We, you know, for our prospect team, don't even usually get that. So we're already working at a disadvantage there. And then you get into things like, you know, not seeing everyone who we put on the top 100. And that's before you even get to, and this is kind of the crux of the article, Jeff talking about his look at Brendan Rodgers, who he has seen probably 9 or 10 times already this year, and he saw several times last year as well. And it's basically he's not sure what to do with him. He's looked really good against bad pitchers. He's looked not that good against even okay pitchers. And he recognizes the talent in place. We obviously ranked him very high coming into the regular season, but it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to ding him, he could fall really pretty far. But the reality is Jeff hasn't seen a lot of guys that he could fall far behind, if that makes sense. So it's just understanding that, you know, it's a limited sample size, even with you know, live looks on these guys. But it's also based on understanding and appreciating our lack of knowledge or our lack of looks or enough looks at some of the other guys that are on the list that we might not, you know, be weighting correctly when we're moving guys up and down. Is that a fair summation, Brett?
Yeah, I think that's a fair summation. And I think it's also important to understand the difference between what Jeff and the prospect team is trying to do versus, the other side of the coin, which is fantasy rankings, which is a very different proposition. I mean, when you're, you know, when you guys are setting out to do the 101 or the midseason top 50, it is a holistic long-term approach.
Yeah. I mean, we want to be right. You know, we want to be right in the long term. It's not about who's hot or who's having a bad, you know, week, month, 3 months. It's about understanding their process and what's likely to pay, you know, to pan out down the line.
Yeah, and with fantasy lists, even fantasy prospect lists, you have kind of the opposite effect where, you know, there are prospects being traded in fantasy leagues all the time, and you know, value is changing on a more rapid basis, and being you don't necessarily need to be as right on a it sounds silly to say, but you don't need to be as right from a long-term standpoint on a fantasy list. You just have to know the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like, yeah, just exactly. Knowing the value is at any given moment is valuable in and of itself. I don't think that's, I mean, in some ways, top 100s or top 50s or whatever that aren't fantasy focused even still set those baselines. But they shouldn't necessarily. And I don't think, again, when you're comparing a real life evaluative list in this context, we don't have enough information to drastically change someone's position. And it's, I mean, in some cases you do, right? Like we can talk about, you know, Juan Soto is not technically, like, if we're going to do the top 50, he wouldn't be eligible because he's in the majors right now. But by the time he was called up, you know, everyone on the prospect team would be willing to tell you he's, you know, we had him 22nd entering the offseason, that he'd be a top 5 prospect and possibly a top 3 prospect, right?
Yeah. He was in low A 6 weeks ago. I mean,
but you go through the reasons, right? Like, first of all, yeah, we had him 12th on the midseason list in 2017, right? So that's one thing, is that we had him further up in years past. And the reason that he dropped in the offseason were health issues. He had another hamstring strain, and he had a broken hand that kept him out. And it was the second time in two straight seasons in full season ball that he had not, or in pro ball, that he had missed like half the season, if not more. And so we loved what we saw. You know, I saw him last year. I talked about it a bunch. But, you know, I think when you're comparing him to other prospects, you have to take the health into account. You know, this year he was once again healthy and once again as good as we thought. So that's one of those things where the context of his history in terms of being how good he was, you know, I think we can say, we'd probably be willing to say, we should have ranked him higher heading into the season, and that we would then be willing to adjust them up because we'd be recognizing kind of the gap between the decision we made and maybe the decision we should have made, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that definitely makes sense. But where I think, you know, where I, you know, and where we've gotten some commentary on what's going on, and what I think is important to differentiate is that it's exactly what you said, is that these players, it's not that these players are not changing the perception about them or their actual long-term prognosis. Things are changing more quickly than just twice a year, but the process is the process for a reason.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, these guys do kind of move up a little bit and move down a little bit, but we want to be sure we're not just catching them at a high point when we update a list. Do you know what I mean? Like, we want to be sure that, you know, it's not just a good 6 weeks, but that there's actually a change there driving the success. Or if there is someone struggling, that it's because of a real issue and not something that is just, you know, a string of bad luck or variance or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's like, for an example would be, we put on the 101, I think at 101, Mike Matuella, right? He's been clocked at 99 in March. He's hit 99 in games this year. He's also getting the ever living crap kicked out of him in the lower minors. What do you do with that? Right? Like, do we move? Like, do we say, okay, he's hitting 99. He's flashing, you know, a 6 or better curveball. Is that someone who on stuff, on, you know, quote unquote process, should be moved up? Or do we have to factor in the fact that he's getting destroyed at the low minors, which he should be tearing through at this point in his career? And that, you know, the command is spotty. The control has been not good or on and off. And he also has a lengthy injury history. So, you know, how do you balance all those factors? I think, you know, the honest answer is it's not entirely clear, and we'd love some more information, which is why we wait until midseason.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, I mean, look, if people want to have, you know, want to do updated lists and stuff, that's fine. I'm just trying to explain our process. And it's that trying, you know, it's basically trying to say that we're attempting to be honest about what we don't know. And, you know, maybe other organizations or other outlets or whatever have access to things that we don't and thus know more than we do and are comfortable, or maybe they have a different, you know, level of comfortability with what they know versus what they don't, or whatever it may be. But that's just where we're coming from. We're trying to be honest with our readership and with our listenership about the fact that, you know, there's a decent amount we're not able to be aware of at this point. And the process that we go through to update our in-season list, the mid-season one, and the off-season one is a long one. And it involves reaching out to people and essentially doing like a cross-check type of thing. It's not obviously flying in to see these guys, but it is getting multiple looks from different people throughout our team, and then back-checking that with our industry sources and our other sources, and just making sure we're not missing anything. And we can't do all of that constantly. I mean, we are doing all of that constantly, but we can't constantly produce a list on top of it, because that takes time and discussion and effort too. You know, but again, and we can go back to, I can go back to Juan Soto. Part of the reason I'd be comfortable moving him in this situation is we had a look at him in low A this year. We had a look at him in high A this year, and we had a look at him in double A. And given that he wasn't at any of those spots more than like a month or 3 weeks, that's really impressive. And that's something I'm proud of on our team. But beyond that, you know, we were able to see him and how he responded to different levels of pitching. And we should add, I was at his first major league start. So we had a look at him in the majors. So I guess what I'm trying to say, Baseball Prospectus, home of your Juan Soto. It's going to be Juan Soto Prospectus now.
It might as well be. It's the same number of letters.
Yeah.
Hashtag Childish Bambino.
Bambino. Yes. Childish Bambino, Juan Soto. That's his nickname. Get on board. So building off that, Brett, and keeping what we talked about in mind, we're going to go throw it in reverse a little bit. And I wanted to talk about some guys that we would move up or down, that we are feeling comfortable with based on what we've seen or heard, that have performed well or terribly, that you would be moving at this point in the season. Is there anyone at the top of your list?
Yeah, I think I'll start with one guy who was in the who was relatively, you know, well thought of coming into the year, but I think has taken it up a level. And I'm going to talk about Austin Riley of the Braves.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I think he's leveled up this year. Yeah.
He's going super sick.
Yeah, last year was kind of a weird split because he was in the Florida State League for a good chunk of the year and wasn't all that impressive. He was still showing the potential and showing the tools, but he was inconsistent. He got up to double A and was in double A for, you know, I think around 50 games, and he was great, way better than he was in high A. And, you know, there were outstanding questions as to, you know, just how much of that was hot streak, how much of that was actual development. He went out the beginning of this year, destroyed double A, and is now hitting very well at triple A. So I think we're not only going to see him relatively soon. I think, yeah, I would not be surprised if he was not eligible for the midseason top 50 when we put that together.
Yeah.
But you know, Riley is a guy who I think if he were still in the minors when the top 50 comes out, I would, you know, and, you know, thinking about it purely from a fantasy standpoint, I would easily have him as a top 20 prospect and possibly clawing at the back end of the top 10.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, what he's doing he should probably get more attention. And I know he's been on a lot of risers lists and he was a hot name in the offseason, all of that. He should probably be getting even more attention. And what he's doing he just turned 21 within the last 2 months, basically right after the season started. It's nuts. He's really damn good. Yep. I'll throw a name out there, and I'll throw some credit to our dearly departed Ben. He had a good article about guys who have kind of re-established value. And I think this guy is someone who was not on either of our lists. He definitely wasn't on the standard top 101. I don't believe he was on yours. Luis Alexander Basabe. He didn't make your list, right, Brett?
No, he was one of the cuts.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy who I think would certainly be in the mix for a back end spot in a real life one. I mean, I'm going off the top of my head, but I think he'd be in that mix. He had knee problems last year and really struggled. Didn't hit for average. Didn't hit for any power. Did walk a lot. I mean, 11% walk rate last year. He's actually upped that to 13%. In 2018, he's repeating the level, so that's worth keeping in mind. But he's also still just 21. He's hitting for average again, 283, 381, 538. That's a really impressive slash line. Again, just 21. I think he'll be promoted to Double A pretty soon. I think, you know, this was a tools-laden guy who was on a kind of a potential risers list, I think, heading into 2017, and who just absolutely tanked. And I think seeing him healthy again, you know, the knee issues were such a big factor there that now that he is healthy, I feel a lot more comfortable despite his strikeout rate. You know, I think the walk rate is there. He's able to run a little bit. He's got the power speed combo. I'm back in on Basabe.
Yeah, he is definitely a guy who, while he didn't make lists, I think it was important not to give up on him this offseason.
Yeah.
You know, I have him on my TDGX team, and not once did I think about not keeping him. But yeah, he's definitely exciting. I'm going to talk very briefly about a player who Craig knows that I liked probably too much coming into the season. Now I feel like I like an appropriate amount. and that is Josh Naylor of the Padres. Naylor is exactly my type. And this is definitely more of a fantasy thing than a regular prospect thing. You know, Craig, you can speak to exactly what sort of love a 250-pound, 6-foot-tall first baseman gets on.
They're trying on him in the
regular
outfield.
Prospect list.
They're trying him in the outfield.
I don't think they've played him in the outfield in a month.
Well, I think you know why.
They tried him in the outfield.
Fair enough. Tense usage there.
Actually, I take that back. They were playing him at first base for a while. Now they're playing him back in the outfield. Look at that.
See?
Look at that. You're more up on this than I am. You're more up on your Josh Naylor news. But Naylor still has not turned 21. And he is hitting 341, 420, 559 in Double A. He's walked more than he's struck out. The power is starting to materialize in games. He's got 9 homers so far. The makings are there for a good, you know, good average, good OBP, 25 to 30 homer bat. And I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be excited. I'm still not in on the overall profile, but we had someone see him. I think Kevin Carter on the prospect team saw him. There's a 10-pack on him if you want to go check that out. He can't play defense, so again, from a real-life perspective, that's an issue. But the bat is good. I just don't think it's really good enough that he's going to get a ton of time and earn a ton of value. That's kind of my stopping point with him. I'm going to go to a guy I've talked about a bunch, so I'll be really quick, but just to reinforce that, I think he's going to see a major boost pending any bad reports. But I think Joe Adell, you know, we ranked him aggressively in the offseason. He's a top 40 prospect for us, basically straight out of the draft. He hit really well in low A to start the year. He, you know, before he hadn't played in full season ball when we ranked him where we did, but we really liked the reports, obviously. He came out in low A. He missed some time with an injury, but when he was healthy, 326, 398, 611 in full season ball. He's just 19 years old. That's really impressive. Walked 10% of the time, struck out 24. That's 24% is not that high if you're going to slug like that. Obviously, it's just low A, but he has that type of power. The exit velocities for him are substantial. He's just been promoted to high A, which I'm excited about because it means means Wilson gets to see him, and I know we'll get some video, so I'm pretty amped about that. So you look, you know how we feel about Joe Adell, but he's really damn good, and I think he's gonna move. You know, it's not gonna be like a 50 spot movement, obviously, given where he was ranked, but it's gonna be enough that given where he is on the list, it's a substantial reflection of what he's been able to do.
Yep. We'll try to keep the any last couple of names we throw out here pretty quick. But yeah. I'm going to talk about another Brave and talk about Drew Waters for a minute.
Okay.
Waters is a guy who wasn't really in realistic consideration for any top 100 list this offseason.
But we liked him. We talked about him.
Yeah, I mean,
he's interesting.
I liked him from a fantasy standpoint, and he certainly did not make the list. But at 19, he's showing a little bit less rawness in the bat than I think was expected. He's showing more pop. He's got he's got a whole bunch of extra base hits and not a whole lot of time. The fact that he's got a pretty strong center field profile bodes well for his ranking on real prospect lists, and the fact that he does have stolen base speed helps him on fantasy lists. So I think he's a guy who is, not going to show up on top 50 lists in the midseason, but if he continues to do anything along the lines of what he's doing now, I think he'll be a comfortable top 100 prospect at season's end.
Yeah, I think he's a guy you give a full season to. I think that's probably good. I don't know if you had anyone else on your mind that you wanted to address in the immediate term. But.
No, I mean no one who I will be deeply upset about if we don't talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, and maybe I think we've gone long enough. I think people are probably tired of hearing about us, but maybe next week we talk about guys who might have shifted down a little bit, who've had a rough go of it, and perhaps for good reason. It's something we can tackle next week for everybody.
That sounds like a good plan.
All right. So,
how many spots George, would you be comfortable moving Enya up?
This was episode 110 of There Is No Offseason. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find me, Brett, at BrettSayerBP. You can find Ben at Ben Carsley, even when he's not here. And you can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
catchy double entendre.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George Bissell, at George Bissell. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful evening.
Go order some Fielder's Choice stuff.
If you order a Prince Fielder Fielder's Choice thing, is that a double entendre?
Yeah, it's a Prince Fielder's Choice. Oh, yeah. That sounds more like Sophie's Choice. That's not.
That sounds more like Sophie's Choice.
That's not good. No, I don't like how that worked out. I regret saying that.